This
is the producers.
The producers. A podcast.
The biggest names in audio production.
Station sound.
Branding.
Radio imaging.
And voiceover.
Voiceover.
Like me.
And me.
Hey. And me.
Bitches.
Interviews.
Tips.
Tricks.
Advice.
Plus the dirty little secrets you always wanted to know.
Or not.
To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com.
Now.
There's a word I never say in copy.
The producers.
With Ryan Green.
Hey, welcome back to the first producers podcast of 2011. I thank you, as always, for checking out the podcast. I know I took a bit of a break. I didn't want to take as much of a break over the holidays, but the holidays got in the way. And then I did have some delays on some of the guests. But actually, right now, I'm pretty locked up. I have at least three for sure guests after this episode. So we've got the Brian Kelsey episode, which we'll hear here in moments. And then I can tell you for sure, let's see here, the boys at Benstown were doing their contest. And Andy over there asked me if I wouldn't mind giving an interview to, I think, what might be their grand prize or one of their winners. I know they had multiple winners over there. But anyway, the link to that contest, by the way, is on my website. So anyway, Paul Armstrong is the guy I'll be interviewing there, but he's a big heavy hitter imaging dude over, he's based in London. He'll be coming up in an upcoming episode. I'm not positive when we're going to lock in the time. But I believe it'll be, if not next, I think it'll be two episodes from now. I do want to say I'm excited to speak with John Kerber. He'll be possibly next or again in the next two or three episodes. We're working out time. He's releasing a new package. And of course, I'll have more information on that once we get the interview going. But it's going to be, with a big company, nationwide package for barter and possibly for cash. So it's going to be available to just about anybody, and I've been using his Blue Sound Design stuff forever, or for, I don't know, 8 or 9 months now, and I just love it. So anyway, John Kerber will be coming up. Also reached out to a guy I've respected for about 7 or so years, and I know he's been working longer than that, but I first found his stuff in about 03, Robert Dudzik. He is, I would guess at this point, most known for his work with Trinity HD Effects. You know, I would say that is his, that's his main deal now. Trinity's been out now for quite a few years, but it's really been ramped up in the last, I'm not positive, something like a year or so. Trinity HD Effects, if you haven't heard that stuff, you can go check it out online, of course. He's got the site. It's a big old great sound design package. But also, he's one of the really tight, and I would say one of the more musical-based radio imaging producers that I've heard. A very, music-centric guy. Uses his musicianship in quite a bit of his stuff. So Robert Dudzik will be coming up as well in the next few episodes. I still have a couple other guests that I'm, got delayed. They had things going on in their lives. One wanted to get a website built first and those kinds of things. But I think 2011 is going to be really cool because I'm going to have a couple more kind of partnerships with some big fun imaging service companies. No details on any of them right now. I'll just wait until they happen. But I think they'll equate to some extra good content for those of you listening, and also some specials and possibly some free stuff and some more exposure for the production world. Also trying to get together a bit of a partnership going to make, I don't want to use the word forum, because to me the word forum has always kind of equated something a little negative and something outdated, but more of a community, which you can always take part in on my website, make comments on posts and talk back and forth that way. But I think we're going to get even a better community going. Anyway, Brian Kelsey is the interview. Brian Kelsey is probably most well known for his work basically relaunching, or depending on how you want to look at it, launching the K-Rock in New York. At the end of the interview, I'll have only a couple, it's a two-parter, at the end I'll have only a couple more notes. Really, I've covered just about everything, so I'll make mention now. There's a lot of extra content in the show notes section on the website. It's a little different though. I did feature some of his audio in the interview. We're going to start with his promo demo here in just a second. Also, some of his radio imaging voiceover demo in the second part. Some of his production in the middle of part one. So there's stuff throughout. I'll have links to his websites. They have all of his audio posted very nicely. But what I've done is embedded some of his video work. He's working on some of his own TV shows, some web shows. He's got a great on-camera demo, some other things that I've embedded into the show notes page. So it'll be a fun little viewing if you would like to take part in that. So just be aware that's there as well. But otherwise, we're pretty much ready to rock and roll. Also going to highlight some of his technical stuff. I forgot to bring it up in the interview. But I'll just let you know a little bit about what he's using at the end of part two, if that's something that interests you. But mostly this is just a pretty good story about a guy who's very creative, really successful, and just a really nice guy. Let's hear some promo work from Brian Kelsey.
Tonight, what's Julie Andrews doing to stay so popular at 68? The star reveals her secret to Deborah on Deborah Norville Tonight. Tonight at 9 on MSNBC.
This house needs some attention.
Instant light, instant value. That is going to be gorgeous.
An all-new design to sell. Tonight at 8 on HGTV.
Catch new episodes every Monday on HBO On Demand.
Mr. Soprano?
Family's back.
Yeah.
More excitement. More drama. More Sopranos. The Sopranos.
And here we are back again. The first episode of 2011. Brian Kelsey. Brian, how you doing, man?
I'm good, but that was horrible. Why did you play that?
Well,
come on.
I will.
Who's that guy?
I will disagree respectfully, but. That's some of your grand promo voice work, though. Boy, you know, as we go through this, I'll start pointing people in the direction of some of your sites and some of your stuff, but they'll see you have a lot going on. And anyway, let's see here. What's the voiceover website? I pulled it up. Kelsey Voiceovers?
Yep, KelseyVoiceovers.com is... I've got like 5,000 websites, but
that's the one. If people want to hear more of just some of your voice work, they can hit that. Mm-hmm. So we'll start there, KelseyVoiceovers.com. Mm-hmm. It's a good site, nice, simple voiceover site. I like it because it's not cluttered with a whole bunch of other stuff. The demos are right there.
Yeah.
But perhaps, in fact, I'll bring this up right out of the gate. My favorite part is your voiceover booth. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I like to be different.
Yes.
No, I found an old mahogany English phone booth that it's all glass, and I use that as when I really need super duper quiet. I've got a monitor in there, and everything's fed in there, and there's soundproofing and stuff on there, and I just hop in there and record.
Yeah, it's really so. You obviously have some sort of a studio at the house, and then that's inside your studio.
Yeah, you know, it's. I mean, it's studios these days. I mean, back in the day, it used to be like you know, piles and piles of outboard gear. Now it's just a computer and a microphone, basically. Mm-hmm. So, it's really, you know, my office that happens to be able to record voiceovers.
Now, we'll get into more of your technical stuff a little bit later in the interview, but do you have an actual kind of a treated room that you could record in as well, or is it really just like an office and then, you know, nothing too special as far as sound treatment?
Yeah, I mean, I built this room myself, and I built two walls between it and the rest of the house just to give a little bit, and, you know, not crazy. I installed exterior doors, just because there's better weatherproofing, which means better soundproofing, and then just some acoustical treatment on one of the walls, like where I'm speaking into. I have two places. I have basically where I am right now, which is just my microphone kind of out in the open in front of my computer, and then the really, you know, quieter one when mm-hmm. you know, the kids are screaming. I can go into that one.
Right. I've done a number of these interviews now, and that seems to be one of the top, I don't even know if you would call it a complaint, just a reality that voiceover artists have to deal with today.
Yeah. Yep. I've had a number of occasions where the little ones have come in and they've actually, you know, if I'm doing something like for a radio station, I'll just have them run in and say, you know, say the call letters, say something, and they'll do it.
Bonus reads. Well, let's go back and kind of start at your beginning. I think a lot of people are going to know you best for your work at K-Rock, and I guess it was kind of that I don't even know if you, I mean, really just kind of a launch in 96, the relaunch technically. But before that, what were you doing and how did you find your way to K-Rock?
Well, real quick, I started at just a small station. I was going to college and I had this, you know, interned in the summer at a radio station. And they're like, oh, you got a great voice. And I'm, you know, like, oh, well, you know, I'm on the radio station in college, which was a total lie. I've never even been on the radio, never, whatever. Then they kind of busted me. They're like, well, the overnight guy is, you know, he's not working. He had an emergency. Can you come in and do the overnights? So I'd never even been in the studio in front of any microphone. Wow. And I just kind of wung it. And the program director was the morning guy. And so by the morning, I kind of had a hang of it. And by the end of the summer, I had a job. So I never went back to college because I kind of kept
Where was that?
This was at the Fox in Norwalk, Connecticut.
Okay.
Classic rock station.
Connecticut guy, yep. Yeah.
And then I was there for a couple of years. And then Q104.3 in New York just changed formats from classical to, they called it pure rock. Mm-hmm. And I applied. I sent my then cassette, if believe it or not.
Yeah.
I had these balloons made up that said Brian Kelsey on the air and in the air, pop and listen. I stuffed it in there, blew up the balloon, and sent the blown up balloon to the program director. So he had to pop it and listen to it, and he hired me. So I was at that startup for 3 years, and then K-Rock came along. I just kind of found my way to them. So I've been basically kind of part of mainly startups,
you know, yeah.
Format changes.
I think some of my friends that kind of grew up in the New York area, that early incarnation of the Q104.3 rock station was just one of their favorite rock stations ever.
Yeah, that was a great, great format and a great time. It was like, you know, for me personally, I was single and, you know, it was like, you know, working at the cool rock station and, you know, it was fun.
Yeah, and I guess they basically leaned classic at some point, right?
Yeah, well, after... Well, they all fired us. In fact, ironically, the same guy that fired Howard Stern, who I later worked for, fired me because Randy Bongarten. He was the GM of Q104.3, and they had a kind of format change and a like ownership change, the classic radio situation, and they fired most of us.
Hmm.
And it was exactly at that time that I got fired that K-Rock was switching and needed somebody and was interested. So I was out of work for about 3 months, but I was pretty much, you know, K-Rock was in the mix. And yeah. Luckily it all came through.
Now, when you went to K-Rock, this is 96-ish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is when they did that, what were they, new rock? What were they, new rock?
I think it was just new rock.
Yeah,
K-Rock?
And
yeah.
They hadn't quite changed into that sort of alternative thing they were doing officially yet.
Right.
And they, yeah. And so I think when people talk about New York City rock radio, they bring up the early days of Q104.3, and then they bring up that period of K-Rock. They say, well, that's when K-Rock was good.
Yeah. Well, it started John Frost, who's my absolute idol. He actually led the charge. I had to kind of fill his shoes because he simultaneously. From K-Rock, K-Rock QLA,
yeah.
Started all the production and got K-Rock New York up and running. So I had to like pick up where he left off, which was just like the biggest shoes to fill ever. But he helped me along. It was awesome.
That actually was one thing I was going to bring up pretty quick here. He sort of did the launch, I guess, mm-hmm. and you took over. Would he be considered, you just said, one of your idols or whatever, but as far as getting trained in the world of radio imaging, would you say you ever really had training, or are you one of these many guys who just sort of learned your stuff on your own as you went?
John Frost. That's all I listened to. Everything he did, I just was amazed and still am amazed and... I just listened to what he did and his sense of timing.
Yeah.
You know, that's so important in imaging is timing and pacing. And he just had it. And that's where I learned it from. And just, from there.
And, I don't want to say this the wrong way, but You learned some of your stylistic things from him, but did you make kind of conscious decisions or efforts at the time to not be him? Or was that even really in your mind at that point? Or were you still just trying to do whatever was best? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I was just trying to be him because when I got hired there, I mean, it was a big deal for me. And the program director at the time was Steve Kingston, who was just like, you know, keep it consistent. Don't jump in there and rock the boat just yet. Let's just kind of keep what he did. And then we can kind of take it from there. So that's what I did. I just kind of tried to match what he was doing. And then from there, once he was kind of phased out, I could kind of branch off on my own.
And yeah, I was going to say, was there a point like you could specifically say it happened on this day or around this time where you started to really put some of your own personal touches on things? Like you started changing the way the promos sounded to this or to that?
No, it's all so foggy. It just kind of blended. There were some days that was my own stuff that just sucked, and you know, and some days that was all his stuff. And you know, he stayed the voice for a lot of it. Him and I kind of, you know, co-voiced it for a while until I took over. So it's all kind of mingled together.
Yeah, I was going to ask that too. So he launched it with his voice as the main, I guess, you know, branding voice of the station.
Mm-hmm.
And then you continued to use him a bit. Did you kind of slowly put yourself in there, or was it kind of a switch overnight one day where you just became the voice of K-Rock?
It was gradual. We used him and Will Morgan, who's also just awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, gradually kind of get in there. And you know, even to this day, Steve Kingston, he always made fun of my voice and he called me Neck Nuts. So I don't think he even knew my name. He just said, Neck Nuts, get down here. Neck Nuts, gone. Where's that promo? And just, that's, you know, so, but he still, you know, listen, he let me be the voice of the station. And so he could call me whatever he wanted.
Right. Were you using, though, other voices as you went along? Like, how many voices did you like to use in your imaging? Did you like lots of voices? Did you like to kind of keep things honed down into one main voice?
For promos, I like to do, again, like John Frost. When I listened to him, I was like, wow, man, he must have like 10 people working under him. But obviously it was his own voice doing all the different voices. So I did that a lot. But like they would have, you know, I think got a couple random, like Vic Caroli did a couple lines once. And there was a couple old K-Rock LA voices. Some, I don't remember, Quasar, I think, some old deep, just K-Rock kind of things. And but nothing on a regular basis other than Will Morgan and, you know, John in the beginning.
Yeah. It's funny when I think about you guys, there's probably a couple others out there too, but really you three, you all have similar styles, but you all definitely have your own kind of personalities. I don't know if you agree, if you can hear a little bit of Frost and a little bit of Will in you, and maybe they can hear you in them. I don't know.
Well, I just copied the two of them, so, because they're both awesome, and so I just, you know, tried to do what they do. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's just a certain sound. I've just honed in on those two, both of theirs. Just, I can't even describe it. It's like the production is like potato chips. It's like crisp and just, you know, sharp, and the delivery is very, I can't even describe it, but that's, you know, that's what I kind of emulated after.
Yeah, I've listened to some. I'll play some more samples of your stuff. I have a question sent in for you, CJ Wilson. I called her a dude the first time I made reference to her on a podcast, so that was exciting. But she's a very talented female producer.
What does the CJ stand for? Is it like Christine or like Chloe?
Well, yeah, you know, I honestly don't know. I know that she's not the pitcher for the Texas Rangers.
That we know. Okay.
I know that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It might be Charles. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe she had weird parents and that's why she goes by CJ.
Chucky. Okay. Well, we'll find out, I'm sure.
Yeah. But anyway, she brings up, let's see here. Oh, now I completely lost my train of thought. Now she brings up a couple things, but what I was going to say about your production, and this goes true with Frost and Will, and again, other people, but what makes it really good to me is the tempo, you know, like you had mentioned, all the effects, everything you're trying to do, the theater of the mind stuff, it happens so fast, but you don't lose any of it, you know?
That's the goal. Yeah.
And I think that that's a skill. And, you know, I personally try and do some comedic bits like that. And it's like one of those things you hear. If I were to hand the same job over to one of you guys, you'd be like, yep, that's how it's supposed to sound.
Well, no, I think it's, you know, you just kind of hear it. I don't know. It's like I'm a musician. So it's like it, you know, music and beats and rhythm and everything, it's goes mm-hmm. hand in hand. So it's, you know, kind of inbred.
I've asked this to other guys in the past, but being a musician, how much did that not only influence but assist in your abilities as a radio imaging producer?
A lot, because I mean, you know, we're dealing with music in our promos and everything like that, and there's again tempo and rhythm and you know, beats and, you know, everything just needs to flow.
Yeah.
And you know, it all stems from music. I mean, I'm a drummer, so it's like it all, you know, it all kind of just comes together from that initial drum and rhythm and everything that's going on in my brain.
And I know that some of your stuff is, you know, you like to do the sort of anti-jingle type promos mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. Were those one of the more fun things that you would get to do or you would like to make?
Best is so much fun. I mean, I can't sing. I mean, I could sort of sound like I sing when I was doing those, because
yeah.
I don't know why, but and again, that's I never heard of that. That's what John was doing, and so I just took his cue and, you know, found parts of songs or spliced songs together where there was no words, but the, you know, the phrasing was there, so I could sing over it and just made up stuff.
This is, you're listening to the Howard Stern Show.
It's Captain Cornerstone.
Captain Cornerstone, who at age 7 tragically lost his hearing due to facelift surgery gone bad.
Scalpel. Oops.
Was left only able to communicate in sign language.
I have to.
It was then he realized he was on this earth for one thing: to fight the evil forces of boy bands.
Switch gears a little bit here. This is what CJ wanted to know about, is your work with Stern. Now, I guess just go ahead and tell me the story about how you started doing things for him.
Well, he's in the same, you know, not two doors down, the same hallway at K-Rock. He was, you know, that's his flagship station. So I was hired at K-Rock, and then one day he just came down and came into my studio, and, you know, I've listened to him forever. I mean, forever.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in the New York area. So he came in, he's just like, Brian, you know, God, I love your work. And I'm like, what? Howard, are you kidding? I mean, I, you know, you're my idol. And he's like, no, I'd love for you to do production for me and blah, blah, blah. And I said, of course. So I started. So I started making, he just said, make whatever you want.
So
I just started making jingles and parodies and bits and everything and bumpers. And then eventually I became the voice of him, their voice guy. I don't know what happened, the contract ended or whatever. So I started doing all the voice work and everything for him.
Before that, he used to have, I don't remember who it was. I think it was sort of a famous guy.
Paul Turner.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like that deeper, growly, more scary type guy.
Yeah. I think they were, it was kind of a little bit passe and kind of moving away from that. And so they just wanted to switch it up.
Yeah, well, it seemed like you were one of these kind of trendsetters in alt radio, and K-Rock was definitely becoming an alt station, you know, still a rock station. But anyway, yeah, that was the trend in general rock radio, so Stern probably felt he needed to follow.
So and much fun, yeah.
We got one of these dudes like three doors down. Why don't we just go get him?
Go get him right here.
So how much writing did you do for his show?
Well, I mean, I...
Or the bits or the promo work or any of that stuff.
I mean, I don't know. A lot of times, like, they would write stuff, like Fred would write stuff and say, hey, can you voice this for me or whatever? But, most of the stuff I just kind of wrote myself and recorded and just handed to Gary,
mm-hmm.
Baba Booey, and it would either get approved or if they needed it tweaked or something, it would be changed. But usually they're just like, they let it go. And, so in the end I was just doing all the bumpers in and out of shows, and I mean, you know, whatever, anything I came up with, mm-hmm. so I don't know what percentage that is, but whatever, you know, whatever I felt like doing it, which was just great. I could just make up anything and just give it to them.
Yeah, kind of one of the just the ultra creative jobs.
Just, right. They're just like be funny and just give it to us.
Yeah. And just, you know, in all honesty, was there I'm sure there were a certain amount of things that they would be like, nah, that's not quite going to make it. I'm just kind of curious if you ever had those situations where I'm like, man, this is brilliant. Oh, I can't wait to hand. They're like, nah, not for our show. But thanks anyway. nice try.
It never really happened. It happened more with K-Rock than with Howard. Howard usually was okay with everything.
Okay.
I can't even really remember too many things that were just flat out denied or whatever, but the K-Rock stuff was more tricky, and that happened a lot more there. Which I'm like, oh, I produced this killer promo, and it's like, nah, start over. You know, I know it's New Year's Eve at, you know, 8:00 PM, but I just start over.
Yeah. I guess at this point we're getting close to the year 2000, or I think you told me you left there in 2000.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What were the circumstances with that? What, you know, other opportunities, or why did you end up leaving K-Rock?
My contract was up, and I, you know, have had a voiceover agent, and I was getting a lot of voiceover work, and I crunched the numbers, and I was like, wow, I could make more just working freelance at home and mm-hmm. not having to come into the city, and then I'm doing here, and I'm just decided to take the plunge. And Howard, before I did that, I knew that, you know, Howard would agree to, he'd hire me kind of just on my own freelance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did it. I, you know, at the end of my contract, I ventured off on my own.
So you were
the
able
great
to,
Steve Stone came in after me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was going to bring that up. There's been a handful of amazing talent that came in after you there.
Well, yeah, I mean, Steve particular, I mean, it was, you know, great. He's awesome. And he came in, and I basically just, I didn't have to show him how to do anything. I just, you know, showed him the procedure of, you know, just how it worked there, and tried to tell him about the personalities and stuff like that. And he slipped right in, and boom, he was off.
Was there maybe like a week or two layover between the two of you, or?
No, I actually kind of quit in September. And they kind of asked me, they're like, can you just stay till the end of the year and just kind of transition Steve and or whoever we hire? And it was Steve. And so the last couple of weeks, Steve was in with me. And then I, you know, New Year's Eve was my last day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's a pretty good situation then. So at that point, you know, you're booking lots of voiceover jobs. I'm imagining you've built up your kind of stable of radio stations you were voicing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So and then but you got to keep doing some Stern stuff. How long did you continue to do the Stern stuff through until he went to satellite, or?
Yeah, they went to satellite, and at that point, you know, before I was pretty much just dealing with Gary about, you know, money and Tom Chiasano, who's the general manager. But then when it got to Sirius, it was a different time, and they were like, listen, we'll pay. And I wasn't dealing with Howard anymore. I was dealing with kind of the Sirius staff side of things. And they're like, well, we can offer you, you know, half of what you're making, and but we need you to kind of do, you know, double the work.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I just can't. I just, you know, and so I didn't. And then, but, you know, between, I did some stuff for them in between. You know, like, I mean, from I think 2000 to probably 2005, I, you know, did stuff here and there, and I was going to sort of work, and then it didn't work out. And so, but yeah, I still keep in touch with all of them. They're great.
Yeah. I'm actually going to interview the kind of the guy who's, you know, John Kerber. I don't know if you know John.
Yeah. I've never met him, but I know. Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to be a guest, coming up in February.
Oh, awesome.
So yeah, it's going to be cool, 'cause I will have, almost by accident, and you know, we'll have run the gamut of people that have had something to do with K-Rock or Howard
right.
since now the mid-90s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you'll have the whole thing covered.
But he'll be the first one I interview that's actually there currently. So.
Currently, exactly.
The producers